Welcome to Northern Goal, the football podcast from the Evening Express and Preston Journal. I'm Ryan Crail, and today I'm joined by Danny Law, Jamie Durrant, and Paul Third. How are we, folks?
Very well, thanks, Ryan.
Happy in lockdown mode.
Aye, all good over here.
Okay, so today we'll discuss a couple of fresh calls to just draw a line under the Premiership season, but there's also the news Cali Thistle skipper Carl Tramarco is to leave the club. But could his boss, John Robertson, be set to join him? Don't worry, there will also be some good news with Aberdeen and MLS partners Atlanta United set to contest friendlies when coronavirus is under control. We also now know the winners of the Highland League's end of season awards. First, though, are the calls from Willie Miller in the Evening Express and Jim McIntyre in the Press and Journal to just declare the Premiership season over. It's time, isn't it, guys? Yes?
Yeah, I think we're facing that very real prospect that the season is over. I think we've now had 7 weekends without football. In recent years for Aberdeen, they've maybe only had 3 or 4 weeks break between one campaign ending and the other one starting. So I think we now need to start, just draw a line under this season and start looking ahead to next season. And I think as well, the comments from the First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, seem to be diverging slightly from the United Kingdom. And it seems to be the case that Scotland's going to take perhaps a little bit longer before we're back up and running. So I think it's really difficult to see a situation where we're going to be able to play out the season. So I think what Willie and Jim McIntyre are saying is correct. It probably is time to call the season to a halt and let's start looking ahead to how we can best save as many clubs as possible from the financial problems that they're enduring and looking ahead to trying to get the 2020-21 season, because we want to get football played at some stage this year, but obviously it's going to take time to do that until it's safe to do so. So yeah, I think it's time to call a season over 2019-20.
The penny is slowly starting to drop. I think that's the promising thing that we're seeing among a lot of clubs, not just in Scotland. But I guess from my point of view, what I'm hoping is, can we now get past the point of, okay, this season is finished? Because that still is the huge elephant in the room for one club in particular, perhaps a few at the bottom of the table. We really need to get moving now, and where are we going? What are we doing? Because rehashing, can we keep going? Can we keep going? We need to finish this. That needs to go out the window, because time is marching on here, and it's not waiting for clubs to just come back and kick a ball about again. We need to get going on a new plan.
And I think kind of waiting on finding out what's going to happen with the Scottish Premiership season, it also kind of holds up reconstruction, I think, a little bit, because I think is it May the 25th, kind of this deadline is for kind of a decision to be made on whether the Scottish kind of season is going to resume or not. And then I think Anne Budge was hoping to have a resolution or kind of a plan in place from this reconstruction group within a few weeks. So those kind of two things, to me, don't kind of mesh together kind of too cleverly. I think calling a halt to the Scottish season, Scottish Premiership season, sorry, as soon as possible, gives the reconstruction group a little bit more kind of clarity to play with, and then they can kind of thrash out a resolution for clubs to vote on. It gives us all a bit of clarity to look ahead to what 2020-2021 might look like and whenever it is safe to resume.
I feel we've had kind of two sides of this debate in the last few weeks. We've almost had this side that we're maybe kind of displaying just now, which is the acceptance that the Premiership is probably over. And then you've got kind of the ideas people, the people that are, I know some of these are coming from England, some of these ideas, but there's people talking about shortened halves. There's people talking about, Paul, like you mentioned this earlier to me, CGI fans, things like that, that will make playing football behind closed doors either possible or even getting to the stage where it will be like closer to football with fans in the ground. However, when you're seeing someone like Dave Cormack, the Aberdeen chairman, who has been one of the main people driving this, can we play behind closed doors? Even he's accepting that that's something now that looks towards maybe the start of next season. And when you see the SFA's doctor, John McLean, saying that we're talking about September, October before any football's played, behind closed doors or not, then we are now talking about really needing to work out how next season is going to function, whether that's going to be behind closed doors or not. So the Premiership this season has just become a sort of thing that needs to be put to bed, in my opinion, and sooner rather than later, so we can start focusing on getting things in place for the next campaign.
Can I have my trademark Callum Law style rant here? because I'm just flabbergasted by some of the nonsense that's coming out worldwide, actually. I'd love to be the chief executive of the PFA at the minute. It seems like it's money for old rope, that gig. It's just a joke. People at the ground, when we come back or near the vicinity of the pitch, should all have tested negative before they get to play. Can we agree on that?
Yep.
Okay, so, and following that, we're going to say, okay, we're not going to play a full 45-minute half now. This is what he's proposed this morning. I don't understand what difference the time on the pitch actually makes. We're talking about more subs. FIFA have suggested that one. I don't know if fatigue makes somebody more susceptible to catching the coronavirus or not.
I took that as to be about, because the players will be unfit now and won't have time for a full pre-season, that they would maybe give them extra subs to sort of take away a bit of that impact and allow the games to be played competitively to the end.
Okay, I'll take that one then. I'll rein that one back in. Neutral stadiums, again, I don't see what difference that makes. And CGI fans, which we've alluded to, is just, oh, fantastic. That would be hilarious. I can't wait. Please do it. Let me have again Halloween and we can put CGI fancy dress punters in the background. It'll just be, this is the levels of farce we're getting to. Where is the sport and integrity in all of this? That's a phrase that I know so many clubs have loved to use the last 5 years. I could accept most of these changes if they were being made for the start of a new season, but I'm 100% against any notion of moving the goalposts just to try and finish the current campaign anywhere in the world. It's just, you can't say, well, we played, well, think of all the 90-minute winners and things that you've had, and now we're only playing 80. It's nonsense. It's nonsense.
There's also the moral standpoint as well, isn't there? I think it was Jim McIntyre that maybe mentioned this today in the P&J, that you're draining resources. You've got a situation where key workers can't get enough tests, but we're talking about rediverting tests for COVID-19 to football players and ground staff and people that will be in charge of making sure that we can play these games behind closed doors. You're also requiring a drain on resources. Like, coronavirus is still going to be about, and you're going to be draining resources for paramedics to come and stand on the sidelines at games in case players get injured, things like that. Just even if it was possible from a health standpoint, there's got to be a sort of, you've got a moral compass about these things, surely.
It's a two-pronged approach for me. I mean, firstly, it's the financial side of things. I mean, you look at the costs mentioned for individual clubs to test players on a regular basis and staff for coronavirus. And the figures that I saw mentioned last week are about like £150,000 per club. And I mean, are you going to go to Ross County and Hamilton and say, look, guys, you've got to fork out 150 grand to play this game behind closed doors? I mean, I would imagine they'd kind of laugh that out of court, so to speak. And then you've got the optics of it as well. I mean, if you're a club how can you justify paying out X amount of money to take these tests away from NHS workers for kind of their use in the general public when they may be struggling to get hold of these tests just to kind of get a game of football played? I mean, in my opinion, it would look terrible for football as a whole if that kind of scenario was going on.
I mean, I think the big issue just now is that, and what, I mean, every government and I guess everyone that owns a business perhaps is looking at is trying to strike that balance now, particularly for governments, between it's the health versus wealth debate, because, I mean, there will be the long-term economic damage of the longer the lockdown persists, then it'll be more and more difficult for businesses to get back and running, get up and running, and to try and reduce any potential redundancies and things like that. So in football clubs, I guess, there are no different. And the chairman at the football clubs, the owners, they'll be looking, knowing that if we can't play football again this year, then, I mean, there will be a lot of football clubs that would really struggle to survive that. Dave Cormack's pointed that out already. And they know that if they manage to play some games behind closed doors, then it would be a way of bringing funds back in. But then you have to balance that up with, well, what happens if, although we go through all these tests, but if, say, even one player becomes seriously ill because of this, then, I mean, the fallout from that would be quite horrific. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens with that one.
Where do the media factor in to this? I know there won't be many fans out there listening to this, giving too much thought to any of us poor souls, but presumably they're looking to maximise the coverage of this, given that people are not going to be able to go and watch games live and in person. So we're going to go there and we're going to cover a game. What's the logistics of that happening? How do we then talk to a manager or a player after the game? Or are we supposed to cover it remotely from home and then do interviews via Zoom or Skype or what have you? So many things, just in the little finer details that we need to get our heads around when it comes to this.
Okay, so it looks like the questions will continue for another week then. As I mentioned earlier, another piece of news that we've had in the last couple of days is that Carl Tremarco, the Cali Thistle captain, will not be offered a new contract at the club and will therefore be leaving in the summer. It's not summer yet, is it, guys? Don't think so. It's still spring. Jamie, you've seen a large part of that spell where there have been trophies at Cali Thistle for Carl Tremarco. What's your reflection on this news?
I mean, it's the first one was obviously a bit of sadness and disappointment given kind of Carl's service to the club over the last 7 years. I think anyone who's kind of watched him play at all knows he plays with a proverbial heart on his sleeve. He's a committed player. He's one that's full of energy, and he'll give his everything to the cause. When he was named as captain in 2018 after Gary Warren left, I don't think there was anyone at all that was surprised by that news. I think he was kind of ready-made captaincy material. And he says he's been through with the club through a lot of the kind of high points in terms of kind of winning the Scottish Cup, qualifying for Europe. Obviously, he had the infamous kind of sending off in the Scottish Cup final, but he's been kind of synonymous with the club over the last kind of 7 years. He's made over 200 appearances in that time. He stuck with the club during relegation. I believe he agreed like a wage reduction when he signed a contract extension after they were relegated. So he was kind of prepared to do that for the sake of the club and to stay around. So there was obviously an obvious kind of sense of disappointment when that news came through. You kind of have to caveat it with something that Liam Craig, the PFA Scotland chairman, touched upon last week, that given the uncertainty around the Scottish season and the kind of the financial implications of the current lockdown, most clubs aren't going to be in a position to offer contracts to players. They're not going to be in any rush to do it. And in Carl's case, it's obviously a harder one for supporters to kind of get on board with because of what he's meant to the club. Had it been someone who's only been there maybe a season, I don't think there'd have been kind of as much kind of just discussion or debate about it. But because it's Carl Tremarco, because of what he's meant to the club, it obviously it means that little bit more to supporters.
Yeah, I remember I covered a lot of Cali Thistle games at the start when Carl first came up and joined the team, and I thought he was very raw. He would pretty much every game be putting in quite a few bone-shuddering tackles to opposition wingers, and he was almost like a guaranteed yellow card for a lot of games. But then as he grew older, he matured, he played just a bit more level-headed, a bit more cool, and he began to kind of grow as an attacking outlet as much as a strong defensive player as well. But he definitely grew as a player, developed a huge amount during his time at Cali Thistle. I think Jamie's right. I think he has been a victim of circumstance. I think if Cali Thistle knew which league they were in next season and their budget and things like that, then I think they would have ordinarily have kept him for one more season. But obviously there's so many uncertainties just now, and they've perhaps just came to this this decision. But definitely seems to be the type of player he is, someone that you would think would be good to have around the club to help develop other young players, and also someone that whether Cali Thistle were playing in the Scottish Championship or the Scottish Premiership, he's someone that you would know would be able to go and do a job at left back.
Well, that's it, and I think it's something that that David Raven's spoken about today, and it's something he's mentioned in the past about keeping these kind of players around at the club, like when their careers have come to an end. Guys like David Raven, Carl Tremarco, Gary Warren have all done their coaching badges while at Inverness, and you would think when they were coming to end of their playing careers that the next logical step would be to find some role for them within the club, be it in a coaching department or whatever. I know Carl has kind of been coaching one of Cali Thistle's youth teams on top of doing his own kind of football, kind of like coaching school up in Rossha. So he's been invested in the community side of things, and he's shown kind of a preparedness for when his football career comes to an end. Whether that's kind of brought about now because of these circumstances, who knows? Imagine kind of after 7 years in the area, he's fairly settled and would probably like to remain in the north, but obviously kind of circumstances and kind of income are probably going to dictate that.
The flip side of it is, how many coaches can you have at one club? I mean, jungle drums are beating that there could be a few young players being released because they need to invest as much money that they have into the first team for next season. We already know financially Cali Thistle are not in the best of places at the minute. And I don't think they're in a position to be sentimental right now in the current climate. And we do have to look, Carl, as good a servant, as good a player as he's been. What is he, 35 in October? Not getting any younger. And I don't know if he's performing at the level he did when he arrived or since he broke into the team, if you like. And I just you have to go with, can we afford to do this? And right now the answer is no, and it's a shame.
To sort of follow up on what you're saying then, there, Paul, obviously with Cali Thistle not being in the greatest financial shape and Tommy Wright leaving St Johnstone the weekend, there have been rumours, reports that John Robertson, the current Cali Thistle boss, could be somebody in the frame for McDermid Park. Do you think that an offer could be put together that could tempt Robbo away from the Caledonia Stadium?
Well, whether the offer comes, I don't know. But if you're St Johnstone, you're being negligent in your duty if you don't have Robbo on your shortlist. I think he's a Premiership manager in all but name. He did a very good job at Inverness first time round. He has since he's went back there. I think he was treated pretty disgracefully at Hearts, having been lured away to the club he served so well with distinction as a player under the Romanov regime. And he probably deserves another shot at top flight all these years later. For me, he's been pretty much akin to a miracle worker at Caledonian Stadium with some of the things he's done in the most trying of circumstances. And the job is only going to get harder, especially in this climate. If I'm Robbo and if I do get an offer, I'm really going to have to give that one a lot of thought. I think it could be hard to turn it down if it comes his way.
I think a lot will depend on what happens with reconstruction. If I know, obviously, Inverness have kind of pushed for a 14-team Premier League, which is obviously see them kind of get promoted. And I think if that was to kind of come about, I think that might persuade John Robertson that, yeah, it is kind of the right thing to stay around and kind of rebuild Inverness in the Premiership, kind of given that's what he's been trying to do since he kind of came back into the club on a vastly reduced budget. And that's something he's had to deal with every year since the parachute payments stopped. And kind of the more experienced players maybe left, and he's kind of had to chop and change his team each summer. Should Inverness remain in the Championship for a fourth season and kind of have to deal with further reductions in the budget, then there may come a point when he says, this is too good an opportunity for me not to at least explore.
I mean, the other issue as well is that it depends what happens with Hearts, because if Hearts were to be demoted and go down to the Championship, then there's been a lot of suggestion that Daniel Stendel would probably walk away. And if that was the case, you would think that if Hearts as a Championship team were looking for a manager, then again, John Robertson would probably be high on their list of priorities. And I know that, I mean, St Johnstone just now are in no rush to appoint someone with there being so much uncertainty just now. I guess it'd be a worrying time for Cali Thistle fans because, I mean, John Robertson's consistently got that side punching well above their weight. But whenever that happens, there's going to be other teams looking on and being impressed with the work that he's doing. So it would be, as Paul says, it'd be a real surprise if he isn't on a short list for any team that's without a boss just now, certainly at the Championship level or a lower Scottish Premiership team.
Okay, we will wait and see then what develops with that. There was also over the weekend Aberdeen's sit down on their social media with Chairman Dave Cormack and the president of Atlanta United, Darren Eales. They, as part of their strategic partnership, which has also seen a sizable donation go to the AFC Community Trust in the last few days, they also teased the fact that they could, when coronavirus goes away and is banished from the globe, that we could see friendlies between Aberdeen and Atlanta not just at Pittodrie, but over in Georgia in the States. That's something that'll get the fans excited, yeah?
I think so. The novelty of Atlanta coming to Aberdeen would be fascinating. I'm not so sure how Aberdeen going to Atlanta would work out in reverse. It would have to be in the winter break, you would think, because as Dave Cormack made a point in the sit-down, I think it's 100 degrees and the humidity is off the scale in Atlanta, Georgia in the summer. I don't see too many Dons fans fancying a game, sitting watching a game in those sort of conditions.
They'd struggle to get tickets, wouldn't they?
Possibly. I suppose when you look at it that way, but they're still going to go. They're going to fancy go to the States for the summer. I fancy that, but it would be interesting. I can't say I'm against the idea.
Is part of the interest the standard difference between the teams? I know that MLS has perhaps been a league that's always been viewed as being maybe behind Scotland over the decades, but it would be interesting to see just how Aberdeen fared against a team from the MLS.
I think the only kind of barometer that we've got on an Aberdeen kind of scale was obviously John Gallagher, who came over for this season. And obviously he found it quite difficult to nail down a regular place in the Aberdeen first team. And they say there was games when he looked electrifying, and then there's some games where you would struggle to kind of remember that he was playing. So that's the kind of the only real gauge we've got on how the two teams would stack up against each other. And as Aberdeen have shown in the past, when they've come up against teams like Burnley, who are obviously perceived as a bigger club, that they have they've punched above their weight to kind of get up to that level. I think it would be an interesting prospect. It'd obviously only it would be a friendly, so there'd be a less competitive element there. But I think it would generate a significant degree of interest if that was to come about.
Yeah, I think with the partnership between the teams as well, I think it should be hopefully inevitable once things change in terms of the health situation that we're in just now, that we do see Atlanta United over here. I think that's probably potentially going to be more likely, but it would be, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how the sides match up. I mean, the MLS is growing from strength to strength at the moment. I think it is a league that's becoming much stronger. So I think an actual competitive match, I think it'd be a very difficult one for Aberdeen. But yeah, it'd be good to see, and I think it might be the type of thing that could help raise funds as well for both teams if that does come to fruition. But yeah, it's a nice prospect to think about football returning in a game like that. It'd be a nice way to start a new season, perhaps.
It's another layer on this partnership between Atlanta and Aberdeen. I think when the announcement was first made, we all treated it with a bit of scepticism, but it's been pretty a fruitful one, should I say, for both clubs so far. Atlanta are enjoying the link with Aberdeen. I think there's been parties back and forth between the two clubs in terms of looking at the best practices, as the corporate men like to say. But it's interesting. I'll be really interested to see where this is going to go.
It's obviously a different scenario as well, because you've got the boots on the ground with Dave Cormack there. So the fact that you've got an Aberdeen chairman based in Atlanta, I guess, makes it so much easier for that partnership to blossom. So I think that's helpful, having Dave in Atlanta. That makes that might be one of the reasons why it's perhaps a slightly different partnership to some that you see between some clubs, where it can be perhaps a token gesture or seen as effectively like a feeder club. But it does seem to be a true partnership the way things are developing just now.
The other bit of news that we had in the last kind of day or so was the fact that the Highland League, not put off by the fact that they had to end the season early, have announced their award winners for the campaign. Sid Mackay, the Brora Rangers manager, getting the Manager of the Year prize. His player, Andrew McRae, the Player of the Year, and familiar name, friend of the show, Keith's Cammy Keith, with a Golden Boot. First of all, with Brora guys, obviously it's pretty easy to determine who's the Golden Boot winner, but I think that's fair enough for the Manager of the Year and Player of the Year, yeah?
I think so. I think Brora, I think by most opinions that you kind of gauge from the Highland League, were by far the best team that people came across this year. They were kind of a bold, kind of attacking side, invariably playing with four strikers on the pitch at one time. Sid Mackay is still kind of a relatively young manager as far as kind of football experience goes, but he seems to have kind of really got the players buying into what he wants to do and where the club wants to go. I think the the bigger issue for them at the minute is obviously which division they're going to be in next season. And I think they're kind of hanging on this SPFL reconstruction group to find out what the kind of the outcome is. If I speak to anyone within the club and they feel they're geared up for promotion and ready for a crack at League Two, and not just to kind of to get in there, but to be a competitive League Two side as well, and similar to see what Cove have done this season. And I think it would be interesting to see how Brough would do if they got a chance at that level.
Yeah, I don't think you can argue with Stephen Mackay getting the manager of the season award, and also Andrew McRae for the player of the season. I mean, the one manager that I think does need to be flagged up though is Ross Jack at Rothes. I mean, he's done a tremendous job since going into McKessock Park midway through the season, and it'll be interesting to see if he's able to continue that momentum when the Highland League does get restarted again, particularly if Brough end up in the SPFL, because I mean Rothes have made huge strides this season, and I think Ross Jack's one that, while Stephen Mackay probably a worthy recipient of the award, Ross Jack would certainly be someone that would have been on everyone's shortlist for that.
The Brough assistant manager obviously made a late bid for Clubman of the Year with his Twitter karaoke exploits. Are any of you guys planning on recording a clip and sending it in?
I'm all right, thanks. I don't think anybody needs to hear my singing voice beyond the people that live around me.
Paul, you're a karaoke expert.
I wouldn't want to show these boys up.
Okay, so I think that'll just about do us for this week's episode of Northern Goal. Thank you to Paul, Jamie and Danny for joining me today.
Thanks, Ryan.
Well, pleasure.
Should you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at northerngoal@dctmedia.co.uk, and look out for the show every Tuesday. We'll keep doing it as long as this lockdown lasts. And if you've enjoyed listening, please subscribe to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And finally, stay safe out there. Well, in there. Goodbye. Hope you loved the episode, and if you did, we'd be grateful if you could leave us a review or rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to pick up your copies of the Press and Journal and Evening Express every day for the best football writing and analysis in the North.